This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06 in the evening, which can only mean one thing. It's time again for Popit Popit Parliament. Producer Tasha Fusil joins us with some updates from what happened in Dewan Rakyat today. Tasha, what do you have for us?
Okay, so there was another demonstration today. This time it was staged by a group of student activists. They were there to protest against the government's statement that they are unable to fulfill Pakatan's election promise with regards to PTPN, which is, of course, to defer the payments for those earning below 4,000 ringgit per month. These student activists are from several varsities, and they had walked all the way from University Malaya to Parliament while wearing their convocation robes. Imagine the sight of that.
Wow.
Yeah. They had planned to hand a memorandum to Education Minister Dr. Mazie Malik. Here's activist Muhammad Faizuddin protesting in front of the Parliament gates.
Kami sudah berjalan sebanyak berapa kilometer?
9.
Kami berjalan 9 kilometer. Ada di antara kami yang tak makan pun pagi tadi. Ada yang terpaksa berhenti seketika semata-mata untuk bertemu dengan YB Mazie Malik. Tetapi malangnya hari ini kami diminta untuk tunggu di tepi jalan. Kita ingin mengucapkan kepada Mazie Malik bahawasanya kamu hipokrit. Kamu mengangkat suara demokrasi, melawangkan suara demokrasi, tapi hari ini kamu biar kami berjalan 9 kilo untuk berjumpa dengan kamu, tapi hari ini kami terpaksa duduk di tepi jalan seolah-olah kami tak ada apa-apa. Memang kami tak ada apa-apa. Kami bukan seperti syarikat besar yang boleh melobi kerajaan Pakatan Harapan. Kami mahasiswa golongan yang paling miskin dan bahkan menjadi golongan yang paling miskin, the poorest segment of the people dalam negara Malaysia, disebabkan hutang PTPTN yang diambil secara automatik, secara paksa kepada kami. Kami sudah kira, kami datang hari ini dengan satu kertas untuk mengajar Mazie Malik. Hey Mazie Malik, kalaulah gaji kami ada satu kes sekalipun, kami terpaksa berhutang RM400 untuk hidup sebulan. Kamu jangan zalim kepada kami. Jangan sampai anak muda Malaysia terpaksa melacur diri untuk hidup dalam negara kita. Jangan sampai anak gadis jual maruah mereka untuk hidup dalam negara kita. Jangan sampai ada yang mak ayah mereka mati di kampung, tak sempat nak beli tiket untuk beli bas, beli tiket bas untuk balik ke kampung tengok arwah mak, kerana duit yang ada untuk tak cukup untuk hidup di KL ni.
You know, and that's the point of university education, right? So you get a good job and you can afford to go back and see your mom and dad if they're being sick in the kampung, and then you don't have to sell your body.
Man,
to
that's
repay
really
your,
intense.
Oh, drama.
It was a very, very extreme example that you were given.
Agreed. Also, I wonder who planned this. I mean, was there a drama graduate who decided that this image of, you know, people in convocation robes walking 9 kilometres would be the best way to make that statement? Because, I mean, whoever came up with that is a strong image.
It is a very strong image. And drama graduate, that's why they can't afford to go back home to visit their
I resent that.
Kampung.
I myself graduated in performing arts. It's not that bad.
I didn't know that.
Was Mazie Malik there to receive the memorandum?
Unfortunately, no, not quite. Instead, there was a representative from the MOE, and according to him, he was asked by the education minister to receive on his behalf, as the minister had other matters to attend to. Ouch. Hence the dissatisfaction on the part of the activists.
And hence those extreme examples, I'm guessing. Okay, so what other updates were there today?
So the hottest question today was still about the possibility of a cabinet reshuffle. Yesterday, Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir Mohamad had said that he's actually open to the possibility. And reporters asked several ministers to comment, but most of them were pretty coy to respond and said that the question would be better directed at the Prime Minister himself. PKR President Anwar Ibrahim said that he had not been alerted to a reshuffle.
Saya ni ahli parlimen sahaja. Soal cabinet reshuffle tu soal Perdana Menteri. There's no one in PKR who has alerted me on the need to change or submit new names. So as it stands, no change.
Were there any thoughts from anyone in the opposition?
Yes, there was. And in fact, it came from Pekan MP Najib Razak. He commented that it would be too soon for a reshuffle to take place.
Biasanya, rombakan kabinet berlaku dalam satu tempoh yang agak lama sedikit. Biasanya, setelah setahun setengah lalu baru ada rombakan kabinet. Tapi kalau berlaku dalam Seri 2 ni, berarti bahawa ada satu keputusan yang tidak mengikut kelaziman dalam negara kita. Dan ini boleh membawa pada tafsiran bahawa menteri-menteri yang dilantik itu tidak berwibawa ataupun tidak menjalankan tugas sebenar mana yang diharapkan.
Or if I want to silence my critics.
Man, bukan MP Najib Razak continuing to rep the opposition really hard. So what else was discussed today?
The smoking ban came up again. This, of course, refers to the government's initiative to ban smoking at all eateries starting next year. Many restaurant operators have opposed to the ban for fear that it would affect their business. But Health Minister Zulkifli Ahmad said today that there would be no compromise with regard to the ban.
Sementara saya sangat memahami apa yang mereka nyatakan, tetapi jelasnya pendirian kami itu adalah pendirian yang mendahulukan dan mengangkat kepentingan awam, dan kita tidak bersedia untuk berkompromi atas perkara ini. Tempat eateries adalah untuk makan dan bukan untuk merokok. Jadi they can smoke to their apa pun lah, you know, it's not of our business. Our business is to ensure that tempat-tempat makanan awam, eateries adalah selamat, khususnya kepada anak-anak kecil, orang warga emas, wanita, semua, kerana mereka akan mendedahkan ke semua golongan-golongan yang tidak dapat melindungi diri mereka itu sendiri dengan passive smoking. And passive smoking is a well-known fact as a cause of morbidity dan pelbagai penyakit yang bersangkutan dengan rokok. Yeah, and tobacco product. Yeah, jadi perkara itu saya kira sudah muktamad dan saya tidak akan berkompromi dan atas perkara ini kemudian saya akan bertegas untuk memastikan that we will roll it up come January. Yeah, saya yakin ini adalah kepentingan yang kita perjuangkan, dan pada perokok they will have to find other places to smoke, but place of eating, tempat makan restoran adalah eateries are meant for everyone to enjoy their food and not be intoxicated by their passive smoke.
Besides the smoking ban, the health minister also gave a comment about the status of female genital mutilation in the country. Earlier today, Suhakam released a statement criticizing the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Affairs for their quote-unquote misleading response that female genital mutilation is part of Malaysian culture. Zulkifli said that they've met up with the experts and more time is needed to take a stance on the matter.
Saya baru mengadakan perbincangan. Saya sedang menelitikan isu-isu ini. Saya mendapat maklumat yang sangat baik daripada pakar-pakarnya, from the obstetrician, yeah, daripada those yang terlibat langsung dengan perkara ini, dan saya kira saya perlu sedikit waktu lagi untuk memutuskan dan merumuskan perkara ini. Adapun perkara-perkara ini saya kira perlu diziarahi semula, dan saya yakin semua pihak bersedia untuk untuk bersama dalam satu wacana, satu diskusi, seminar ke whatever. Dan saya mengharapkan kita bersedia untuk menimbang apapun untuk ke arah kebaikan semua, khususnya kepada wanita dan kanak-kanak.
So we're going to be discussing a little bit more about the smoking ban as well as female genital mutilation later on in the show. So let us know what you think by calling us, WhatsApping us, tweeting us. You can call us on 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us on 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We want to know your thoughts. Smoking ban, something everyone's been very vocal about, but we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about female genital mutilation, and I, for the life of me, can't imagine what further investigation needs to be done. But hey, I'm gonna just trust the minister on that one, and maybe he might come up with something. Tash, were there any updates on the flip-flop with the death penalty?
Right, so Parliament was told yesterday that the Cabinet would abolish the death penalty for 33 crimes, including murder. One Aziza had commented after the announcement that they would have to reconsider the abolition for cases of murder. Today she told the reporters that she's met de facto Law Minister Liu Vui-kyong, as well as the police and the government will first need to study the root causes of drug-related crimes before making further decisions on the death penalty.
Malam saya jumpa dengan pihak polis dalam D11 yang ada sexual crime semua tu. Dia kata it is abuse of dadah rather than addiction to dadah. Jadi bawah influence of dadah, banyak jenayah dilakukan termasuk yang mati bayi itu kan. Jadi ini dia ada kena root cause itu yang kita melihat dan bagaimana kita menangani masalah itu. Saya dah bincang pendek juga sebut dengan masa dia menteri law itu, undang-undang, sebab dia satunya deterrent, satunya apakah mereka perlukan pemulihan rather than put them in jail and then kill them or gantung sampai mati. Tapi kita dah ada lama macam ni, tetapi masalahnya bertambah-tambah. So it's not tidak satu yang easy but complex thing. We have to look into the matter deeply. Sebab ini melibatkan juga hukuman gantung sampai mati kan. Memang saya rasa ialah it's a despicable crime, and as a mother, as a grandmother of course, you know. Tetapi apakah root cause dia? It's drugs. And then how you going to tackle the drugs? You have to take it in a menyeluruh rather than just mandatory death sentence. And because it has been shown according to Datuk Liu kata, dia tak ada jadi mereka meningkat even though you have that mandatory death sentence. Even then, you know, it's not stopping heinous crime.
I am starting to worry a little bit about the abolition of the death penalty, just a bit, in terms of the messaging that we're hearing. I don't know. It seems to be a mix of saying the right things while also signaling some uncertainty. That seems to be what I'm getting.
No, but also it feels like we don't seem to have the courage of our convictions. I don't know if that has anything to do with being a mother, a grandmother, and all of that stuff. I mean, that's a standard line that politicians always use, right?
But you don't have to be a mother or grandmother to be horrified by the rape of a child.
That's one. Yeah. But also, if it was your child, with vengeance on your mind, you are not the right person to be crafting laws. Laws should be absolved of all of those emotion, right?
Yes, but at the same time, I think that there is something to be said for accounting for public sentiment, and I think that needs to be addressed. I don't think that means that you need to flip-flop on what you've decided to do, but I think maybe addressing the fact that people have very strong feelings without saying that is then causing me to change my mind.
Yes.
You know, so it's,
yes,
again, it's communication. Now, before we let you go, Tasha, there's been some talk about something called the Harapan coin. What is that all about?
Okay, so I'm going to try and explain what it is. It is a cryptocurrency project that was co-founded by Federal Territories Minister Khalid Samad.
I am rolling my eyes. Never mind. Carry on, please.
The website was registered back in December last year, and it brands Harapan Coin as the world's first crypto-politic ICO, or initial coin offering. It's been set up to help fund Pakatan's campaign ahead of GE14. Khalid Samad said later on that he would propose Harapan Coin to Bank Negara and the Prime Minister for it to be used for government transactions. Najib Razak had a few things to say about it. He wants the public to know who's going to benefit from such a move.
Surely he is in absolutely no position to make such demands. His moral standing is highly dubious when it comes to fiduciary issues.
Like I said, Bekan MP repping the opposition line, no matter what you want to say. So did we talk to anybody?
Yeah, we spoke to Lembah Pantai MP Fahmi Fadzil and asked what he thought about it. He asked to exercise a bit of caution.
I think we have to approach this matter very carefully, because I believe that we need to make sure that we have proper regulation around political financing in place, because the nature of Bitcoin, or the nature, sorry, of cryptocurrency, the anonymous nature of cryptocurrency may open us up to a number of issues. At the same time, I think we need to await guidelines from Bank Negara Malaysia with regards to cryptocurrency. I think without these two key information, it is difficult for me personally to proceed with agreeing to something like Harapan Coin.
All right. I think we're going to be following that, Harapan Coin.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And we need to get Jeff Sandu on that for Tech Talk.
And on our show. Yes,
exactly.
That's right. So we're going to be continuing discussions on that if and when it comes up again. In the meantime, Tasha, thank you for the updates. We were asking you earlier what you thought about basically the smoking ban in restaurants, also what you think about female genital mutilation. We've got Sabrina on the line. Sabrina, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, I'm a medical practitioner, mm-hmm. and I have seen the worst of the spectrum. So, as a houseman, when we did our labor room posting, the women from the African subcontinent will always cause a lot of secret discussions amongst the specialists, because it will pose difficulties for them to give birth. It is quite impossible for them to have a normal vaginal delivery. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of instrumentations need to be considered, or even a lower cesarean section. So that's the effect of female genital mutilation. Another one is when people come with their babies, their female babies, to their general practitioners, they expect the doctor to do some female circumcision. And for me, I personally do not condone that, and it's actually not medically indicated. So I end up spending about 15 to 30 minutes educating the parents on why you shouldn't do it. It's different for guys, for male babies, because studies have shown that it's probably sometimes medically indicated, because you can get phimosis, where the foreskin is stuck to the glans penis, the head of the penis. So we actually circumcise the male so that they can urinate better. But for females, there's no reason why you should do that. So I asked my medical colleagues, what do they do when parents come with their newborn babies?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we just pretend, make a little nick somewhere around there just to make the parents happy. So I tell them, I said, that's not ethical. It just saves us from spending half an hour lecture. So that's what we've been doing, all right, you guys?
Yeah, well thank you very much for that update.
But Sabrina, before we let you go, I just wanted to check. I mean, as a doctor or as a medical practitioner, I mean, do you feel any compunction to... I mean, I assume, because most of the time when people come in and ask for this, it's a very culturally driven request, right? Not a medically driven request. How do you balance the fact that there is no medical call for it with the fact that culturally there is a feeling of need from the parents that, no, we have to do this?
A lot of people in our society, they just blindly follow. Just a few hours ago, I heard one of your speakers say, "Oh, why do you cook it that way? Oh, it's because my mom did that, and then my grandma." It's actually, there's no scientific basis or any basis for that matter. So people just do it because generations do it. But when you actually go into the cultural, religious, actually, you'll be surprised. A lot of things that the Quran mentioned is actually not what we are practicing today. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So female circumcision, it's not even mentioned there. It's actually the male, actually sunnah. It's in the sunnah as well as, I think, in the Bible, there is something on male circumcision, right? I've read it. So it's somewhere, I don't know which Matthew or whatever, I'm not so sure. So I feel that education, as a medical practitioner, you need to educate the parents, and it's actually reassurance. Sometimes when they do it, they just don't want to upset their in-laws or their parents. And, they don't understand that the clitoris is actually a very important organ for sexual pleasure. It has nothing to do with anything, with giving birth. So we need to educate people. When you do something, would you do it on yourself?
Right.
If you knew that there's an implication. Or would you do something that your parents did to you without knowing actually that actually abuse? It's actually physical abuse.
Sabrina, thank you so much for calling and for sharing your perspective.
Yeah. I think it's... it's a reality for a lot of medical practitioners, right? And what Sabrina said, it's time consuming, but I think, sometimes you need to sit down and tell people that, it's not just following something blindly.
Yes, rather than pretending to follow someone for something blindly just so you don't have to have that conversation.
Yep, done.
Anyway, keep your thoughts coming through. We've had messages about a number of things, about the students protesting, about female genital mutilation, about smoking. You can call us 7733 2900 to share your thoughts. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to head to some messages now. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.